This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Cassis does it again!
Again!
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
And he swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over! The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
What's up? Welcome back to Playtest. It is episode 180. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Before we get going, hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts. Rate 5 stars, Apple, Spotify, Odyssey. 5 stars, leave a comment, subscribe. Find us on YouTube on the WEEI channel. You can find the Playtest playlist there. It has all our episodes in video form. Hit the thumbs up there. We really appreciate it when you guys do that. And as always, we're on the socials at PlayTessie on both Twitter and Instagram. Sammy is here. Pat's here. It's Gordo here with you. Not dead in the middle of spring training, but we're dead in the middle. Or I guess we're at the very end of the non-game part of spring training, which is nice because, like, if you're into the whole pictures and videos of guys throwing and taking live BP, you got to be getting sick of it at this point. There's some storylines. The Devers thing is definitely still a thing. Do we think that's overblown, or do we think, like, I see it's caught storm with, like, national media and radio, like local radio. We say that as WEEI's Red Sox podcast, but, like, all the radio stations have it. The national TV people are talking about it. Like, Jeff Passan saying, oh, let's see if it gets to the point where Devers asks out or something. I don't know. To me, I don't think it's necessarily overblown. But I think its impact on the rest of the team beyond Devers and the organization is overblown. I don't think it impacts literally anybody else besides him, even Bregman.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's internally with the Red Sox seems like they couldn't care less. I personally couldn't care less. I thought it was some silly comments he made and I was over it the next day. But I'm not surprised that, you know, Red Sox fans and the media here are leaning into it. It's smart from a media perspective. From the fan perspective, it's frankly, I think it's kind of embarrassing how everyone just keeps falling for this bait and blaming anyone but themselves. It's a goofy story. It won't matter when the season starts. I'm sick of it, if you can't tell.
Pat, what do you think? Because, like, there's going to be an end game to this. What do you think the end game is and when?
Oh, I mean, Rathi's going to DH. Rathi will DH, and that is because A, I think it's best for the team, and I'm pretty sure the organization feels that way. If they didn't, they wouldn't have approached him, had the conversation about it. And I think he just kind of gets over it. I mean, he's been paid, he's under contract. I've been seeing a lot on Twitter, but employee of the franchise, which I hate that term, but I mean, he kind of is, right? Like, you're being paid all this money and you're going to play every day, just won't be at third base. Whether that's the when it happens is opening day, I don't know.
What do you think? Because if Devers is going to DH, what do you think is the end game for him? Like, does he just say okay, Or is there more to this that we haven't seen yet?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the beauty of Alex Cora, right? I think like a good, long, productive couple of conversations with Cora, I think maybe it, you know, I don't want to say broadens his horizon, but kind of opens his view to it, opens him up to it. He does it. He kind of catches a groove with it, and all is kind of said and done. I think that's just how it's going to go. That being said, maybe initially there's a little bit of like what we just had where there's like this awkwardness to it. Mm-hmm. But then I think it's going to be the same thing, just kind of like a passing thing, and everything settles down and he's the DH and he doesn't really care about it.
Yeah, I feel like the reason that all of this became a real thing is because Devers got in front of the mic at the wrong time. And I don't know how that stuff is determined. I know that Devers every year is asked to sit on the bench and do a press conference with the media. And for the last 2 years now, he's said notable things. So I don't know how they determine when those guys are going to do it, but he was going to do it. And it happened to be after the Bregman signing, shortly after, and shortly after they approached him about everything. It was obviously fresh. Even though he was very direct and he obviously meant what he said, I don't think, just knowing him, he's not the type of guy that's going to hold the organization hostage. I know he didn't say that he wouldn't request a trade, which was it perked my ears a little bit. But at the same time, it's just, I don't expect it to go there. And to be honest with you, it didn't exactly sound like they sure bet approached him and said, we want you to be the DH. I think they maybe just broached the subject, because I truly don't think they know what direction they're going to go, because I think so much of that is dependent on, will Christian Campbell make this team? And is Masataka Yoshida healthy to start the season? So I don't think they know what direction it's going to go. So I do think that we've got some time before this plays out. But I mean, Yoshida was working in the field today. He was hitting on the field. So I think there's a legitimate chance that he is ready for opening day. And if that's the case, my honest opinion is I actually think that this ends up with Devers playing third base, Bregman at second base, and Yoshida's your DH. And we'll see if they tip their hand by working Campbell out a little bit more in left field as spring training goes. But yeah, those are the things you're going to have to pay attention to. How much work does Christian Campbell get in the outfield? How much work does Masataka Yoshida get in the outfield? And how much work does Bregman get at second base versus third base?
And I think that's the crazy thing, right? Isn't it pretty insane that what seems to be the biggest dictating factor here is a prospect?
Yeah.
It's like, you have a $300 million player. You have a guy who's getting $40 million a year. And really the thing that is going to set off this domino effect of moves is a guy who's never played an inning of Major League Baseball. And I mean that as a compliment. Like, he's that good that if he is so good, he has to get in that lineup. And then that's when you know, discuss Bregman to third, Rafi to DH, that whole thing. It's just crazy that the first domino to fall is going to be, is Christian Campbell so good he makes the opening day roster?
Yeah. And on that, you have Tristan Casas. Every time he gets in front of the microphone, he's going to speak. He's going to speak his truth. He's not going to lie. He's genuine. He's thoughtful. And when asked about the prospects, he said he thinks that they should all start in AAA. Don't think it was a malicious thing, but he said that they should all start in AAA. I know Tristan Casas is a guy who got a lot of time in AAA. And I think he is saying that in the sense that they've got good veterans. I mean, I don't think he said it. They've got good veterans on the team, and these guys could use more seasoning, and they should earn their spot. So Casas kind of made headlines by saying that and by declaring that he thinks that Devers should be the third baseman, said that Devers is the best third baseman in baseball, obviously meaning overall, and that Bregman should be the second baseman. And Sammy, I want to get your take on Casas, but before we get Casas' takes, I do want to just point out that Vaughn Grissom had a terrific response to this. Bradfo went up and asked him about it, and it could have been tough for him, for Grissom, because when Tristan Casas says that Bregman should be the second baseman, he's essentially saying that Vaughn Grissom either should be on the bench or in the minors. So that can hurt if you're hearing that as a guy like Grissom. But he took it in stride. He was really mature about it. Said, like, I know what the guy means. Like, I know where his heart's at. He's not coming after me or anything like that. So, I mean, good for Vaughn Grissom, who looks really good in spring, looks big. He's hitting the ball hard. and he looks healthy for the first time as a Sox, so it was good for him. But with the Casas thing, Sammy, I want to get your take on it, because I know if you ask people on Red Sox Twitter, and honestly just Red Sox fans everywhere, you'll get two different takes. You'll get the people that love the person that Casas is. They love that he's different. And then you'll get the people that can't stand that he talks, can't stand that he would be the GM here or be the manager, like GM Casas. Like, you get both takes. Where's your head at in regards to Casas speaking on a matter like this?
I just can't bring myself to give a shit. I think if the Red Sox internally in the clubhouse, if they don't care, which is what Vaughn Grissom made it seem like, then I don't care. And I think that it's annoying. It's annoying that Casas said that, and that's it. It's not a big deal. I think people on, we'll just say social media, because I think that's where we're seeing the biggest outcry, plus, you know, some talk radio callers, but people are just making it way bigger than it is. It doesn't matter. If the Red Sox themselves don't care, neither should you as a fan. So I just don't think it's a big deal. I don't even want to talk about it anymore. It's so tiring, and it just shows, like, you can tell. I finally, for once, I'm kind of like, I'm glad I'm the old guy, quote unquote, because I remember all the things Manny would do and say, and people would flip out about it, and it pretty much never mattered until the very end. Then it was like, all right, he's gone, but he still had so much success here. It didn't matter on the field. So I just, before we started recording, I was thinking so much, how am I going to handle this? What am I going to say about it? And I just kept coming back to the same thing. I don't give a shit. That's where I'm at.
Yeah, with the Casas stuff, to me personally, I love that he's different. I love that when you put a mic in front of him, he's actually willing to say what's on his mind. And he's not just saying the media-trained same spiel, the word salad that we always hear after, you know, after the game, the post-game interview, man. Like, you know, we just try to put good at-bats together, you know, play as a team. I thought we did a good job getting the pitcher out of the game early. Guys just rallied off each other, played together. It was good team effort. Like, God, no, speak your mind. Tell me how it actually went. Tell me what you're actually thinking. And he does that, and he's genuine, and he's thoughtful, and I appreciate that. That said, if it had a negative impact on the team, if guys were getting upset at what he was saying, then that's a different story. But Sammy just said it. Like, Grissom didn't take an issue with it. You had Lucas Giolito yesterday saying that the vibes were off the charts. You have plenty of other guys on the team saying the same exact thing. So, yeah, I mean, to me, unless it's going to negatively impact the team, I always appreciate that Tristan Casas feels comfortable being different. And I'm not gonna flip-flop that take when he says something that some people don't like. Like, I get it, maybe not, you know, the best thing to say, but I'm not going to fault him for it, because I appreciate that side of him so much.
Yeah, there's a non-zero chance that Casas went back into the clubhouse, told the guys what he said, and was like, ha ha, I was messing with him, everyone's gonna freak out about it. It's Casas. I don't understand how people are still so rattled by Casas's quotes. And even if on the off chance he's not being genuine, he's just trolling. He does this because it's funny to him. And the way I view baseball, I think, is weird and a little robotic. Like, I don't care about the clips of spring training. That does nothing for me. Couldn't care less. I don't care about the quotes. Honestly, I watching the spring training games, I'll watch the first one or two, and then I'm bored of it. All I want is the regular season to start, aside from going there in person to spring training. I'm excited for that, but I just want the regular season to start. I don't care about the quotes, the videos, the spring training results. We know most pitchers are just throwing fastballs and hitters are working on stuff. It's not the complete package to me. And stuff like this just annoys me, and it makes me want the offseason to end. So I'm just, the quotes, I can't. I'm trying to care. I'm trying to have an opinion on it. I just don't think it's worth anyone wasting their time. And it blows my mind how people will continuously have meltdowns about this stuff. It does not matter.
I think that just coincidentally, everybody who gets so worked up and pissed off that Craig Breslow does not give answers also hate when Tristan Casas talks. Which makes no sense, because when it's Craig, they're like, oh, word salad, nothing good. And then Tristan gives you a genuine answer, sometimes tongue in cheek, which we know, but gives you like a genuine answer. And they're like, why is his opinion matter? Shut up. Like, it is so incredibly annoying because guess what? Tristan Casas is not the manager of the Boston Red Sox. His opinion does not matter. And I mean that in like a good way. I love Tristan. I love that he gets in front of the mic. I love that he always has an answer. My point being, people are freaking out about a comment made about his opinion of a lineup or position when it literally does not matter. And like, to ask Tristan that question is equally useless as his answer. So I just don't care about it.
I don't know if I agree with that. Because he gave an answer. Knowing what these guys think, you know, they're on the field. Like, we give our takes. We're fans / media. Like, I like to think that our opinions matter. He's on the team. He knows these guys. He knows the work they put in. He knows who they are as people. He knows their families. Like, I value his opinion. Not in the sense that like it should impact the decision, but I am curious what these guys who are closer to this situation than anybody, I'm curious what they think.
I mean, the one thing I will not do is blame the media for this. They're just doing their job. And it's kind of like similar concept to what Pat just said. When people talk about Breslow giving canned answers, they complain when he gives canned answers, but then you have a guy like Casas who gives a long in-depth answer and people complain. It's like, you want to have your cake and eat it too. And then it's the same with the media. They ask a softball question and people complain. And then they ask an interesting question and people complain. It's like, people just love to complain. And I think at the end of the day, that's the conclusion we're always going to come to. And that's why I hate these sorts of stories. And you know what? Credit to the media. We're talking about it right now. It could have been a nothing burger. It should have been a nothing burger. Same with Devers' comments. Yet here we are, second episode in a row, we're talking about it. So the media of anyone, that's who did their job right here.
Yeah. And you know what? I know it's not like a super positive story, but it's not what, like, think about a year ago, 365 days ago, what we were talking about. Like, we were just begging to try to find a way to buy into the team. And we were just dissecting like little quotes of optimism coming from the team, which Alex Cora has now basically said since. Yeah, I like last year we had to tell ourselves those things because of the team we had. We had to try to psych ourselves into believing what we could be. Now the team looks good on paper. People are excited about the team. They think that this is going to be a playoff team. And so, yeah, now the negative storylines are what? Who's going to play third base, one all-star or another all-star? Like, yeah, it's not like it's a positive story. Oh, yeah.
What a nightmare. But, we have too much talent. Worse. Where are they going to play?
We've been through way worse the last few years. We really have. Like, we
see?
We,
Gordo. That's what I'm saying. People just want to complain. They're like, oh, this team stinks. Get more talent. Oh, now there's too much talent. What do you,
like, that's part of it, man. I remember, I'll always remember, because in 2018, I was interning in Portland, Maine, and I would come home to Boston on the weekends, and it would be a multi-hour drive, and I would listen to sports talk radio, and I would just listen to them try like so hard to find something negative to say about the 2018 Red Sox. I forget what they even could come up with, but it was impossible. And I'm not saying
they're boring
this team,
because they win the games too easily. I heard that one time.
and like this team won't be that, but I'm just saying, like, it doesn't matter what team you put on the field. There's going to be people out there, and I'm not talking about the Red Sox beat writers. The Red Sox beat writers do a really, really good job. But I'm saying on social media, there's going to be a bunch of people who, and on the radio too, but mainly on social media, you're just going to see those negative people, and they're always going to find negative thing, or they're going to find things to be negative about. So you just got to take it for what it is. Like, this is a story that's, it's going to be one of those stories that we look back on and remember how passionate people were about it, and then laugh at how short-lived it was. That's what I think. And even if it lasts a month, that's still, like, in the scheme of things, short-lived, because it's going to be squashed by the time the season starts.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing, too, is just, like, think of this right now, right this second. We are having a debate on whether or not Alex Bregman or Rafael Devers should play third base. just go in your head, just go think back 2 years. We were saying, you know, if Su Wei Lin can hit about 240, we might be okay. These are good problems to have. Like, you're talking about two top five, top six third basemen in the league fighting for a position, and they're in the same lineup. We have seen, oh my God, we have seen Kevin Pillar here. We have seen, like, Jose Iglesias before the Mets resurrection. Like, Su Wei Lin, Marco Hernandez. Like, there are so many, like, guys that we had to, like, oh, maybe, you know what, maybe they're, if they play like this, we'll be okay. We have two studs. No matter where they play, we're still going to be good. It's a good problem to have. Relax.
Pat, on that, I was looking through Fangraphs today, and I found that the Red Sox rotation has the best projected F4 in baseball. And you talk about 2 years ago. 2 years ago, Corey Kluber was this team's opening day starter.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Our drama issues are now actual drama and not just being furious at the roster. It's like, it's almost refreshing. Like, these are like NBA type problems. It's like,
oh, dude, these are first world problems. We have not had first world problems in Boston for the Red Sox in years.
And I remember probably around this time last year on this show saying, I just want the Red Sox to field a full rotation. And look how far we've come. Now it's what, Goro, you were just talking about the projected war is like on par with all the best teams in the league, like Seattle for the rotation. And now we're talking about Devers or Bregman for third base. Like, you're not going to find me complaining. The only thing I'm complaining about is the way fans are reacting to this. It's just, I wish I was surprised.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
And another thing that I feel like we shouldn't take for granted, and I feel like these stories or these moves have been overlooked because they're quote unquote minor league deals, and I shouldn't put them in quotes because they are minor league deals. Granted, they're going to have opt outs before the year, but I mean, we've talked in the past, including like in 2021 when we had a good Red Sox team, but basically, even when the Red Sox were really good in 2018, like, bullpen depth has been an issue for this team for years. And I was writing out the options today, and it is crazy how much depth they have. And just this week, since our last recording, I think, Adam Ottavino signed to a minor league deal. Matt Moore signed to a minor league deal. Both veterans, both with back end of the bullpen experience. Obviously, both older guys. I believe Ottavino is 39 and Moore is 35. I could be off a year on Ottavino, but I think those are the ages. But I mean, this team just has so much depth where it's like you've got like six bullpen spots kind of locked in and what, like seven, eight, nine guys or whatever competing for the final two bullpen spots. And like, obviously guys will get hurt. We just saw Zach Penrod, elbow soreness, and they don't seem very optimistic about it. So it seems like that one might be headed for Tommy John. But yeah, you've got a crazy amount of pen depth, and it's going to be interesting to see how this bullpen shakes out.
Yeah, I mean, depth is great. Not much more to say about it. I feel like I'm a spoiled fan right now, and it's just because we're so not used to having a well put together Red Sox team. This all feels foreign to us. But yeah, I mean, Ottavino and Matt Moore is your depth. Like, your depth. Not talking about the back of the bullpen, but genuine depth pieces who might not make the team. That's a fantastic place to be. And then I would obviously be remiss if I did not bring up Adam Ottavino's jersey. Greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. Number 00. And his last name starts and ends with an O. There it is. Joe is showing it if you're watching.
It looks like a frog.
YouTube. Dude, it looks so good. That's the best, most aesthetically pleasing back of a baseball jersey we are ever going to see in our life. Like the fact, first of all, 00, nobody's ever worn it for the Red Sox. If he plays in a regular season game, he'll be the first ever. People might want to already crown him as the first ever. I'm not there yet, but 00 is sick. And like I said, his name starts and ends with an O. It just couldn't look any better. It's beautiful. Nothing more important in my life than this singular jersey right here.
It'll be interesting. I'll read you guys off what I think the bullpen situation is right now, and you can tell me if you'd change anything. Guaranteed roster spots, big league deals. So if any of these guys aren't going to make the team, it's because they're getting DFA'd. Liam Hendricks, Aroldis Chapman, Justin Wilson. I basically only say that for Justin Wilson's sake. Signing Matt Moore, getting Matt Moore on a minor league deal does kind of make me think back to the Justin Wilson deal, because basically either they fucking love them some Justin Wilson or they jumped the gun a little bit and maybe should have waited and seen if they could have gotten him or Matt Moore on a minor league deal and been, you know, off to the races there. But yeah, guaranteed Hendricks, Chapman, Justin Wilson. I have as locks, even though they have options, Garrett Whitlock, Justin Slayton, and I have Cutter Crawford in here. I mean, he's not going to be a traditional reliever. He's going to start games too, but he'll be in that spot. Those are the only six spots where, if everyone's healthy, I think those are the locks. And then competing for the final two spots, that would leave Zach Kelly, Brennan Bernardino, Luis Guerrero, Greg Weissert, Josh Winkowski, Chris Murphy, although we have to see if he's going to start and slash when he's going to be healthy. And then Adam Ottavino, who's got an opt-out, Matt Moore, who's got an opt-out, and Austin Adams, who we all forget about, but he had a pretty good year last year. He's here on a minor league deal. I assume he has an opt-out, but I'm not sure that one is public, so I don't know. But how many guys did I just count out to competing for two final spots? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Guys. Nine guys. And granted, like, the opt-out guys, it's not like they're all going to be able to be here. Like, because if they don't make the team, good chance they're going to opt out and try to catch on somewhere else. But right now, you've got nine guys competing for two spots, and that's after the Penrod injury. Like, that's a great place to
Fulmer?
Be.
Did you I mention say, Fulmer? I didn't mention Fulmer. Because he had a quote the other day that made it sound like he's kind of not resigning to being a reliever, but sounds like he's more open to it. Because initially when they got him, they were like, we're going to rehab him and he's going to be a starter. But the last quote he gave, and I don't have it right in front of me, but he said something about like, I'll be a reliever if I got to be a reliever. I just want to contribute. So, I mean, that's another guy who not too long ago was closing games. So it's a great place to be with the depth. No complaints. I mean, just look how similar, far these guys have come.
Similar to Fulmer, Robert Stock too, where it's like, They're stretching him out as a starter. But like, let's be real here. If those guys contribute to the Red Sox at the big league level, it's going to be out of the bullpen. So, yeah, I mean, those are two more guys right there. And those guys are actual depth. There's no way either of those guys has opt-outs. And I think we know for sure on both of those guys that they don't have opt-outs. So both guys will actually be valuable depth. The Red Sox are not going to have a lot of schmucks coming up this year to throw meaningful innings. It's just, you're not going to see it. It's good. It's a good thing.
I do want to kind of not run back a take I had, but I have to say with Cutter Crawford's new kind of injury updates, murmurs of him with a knee thing, some lower body sort of injury, I am a little more open to him coming out of the bullpen. Initially didn't like that idea because I think his best skill is logging innings, 183 last year. But if he's not 100%, I don't really want him logging those innings anyway. So on the record, I'm more open to it now.
I just think he's going to do a little bit of both. Like, if everyone's healthy, and like, let's be real here, going into the season, we've already got Crawford and Bayo behind schedule. So there's a good shot that we're not going to have all six healthy starters here. But if you did, reasonably, you could expect I think they've got like, what, like 13 games in 14 days or something crazy like that to start the year. Like, you could see a six-man rotation out the gate and at times early in the year. And then when that's not happening, Cutter's coming out of the pen and they're not going to tell you when it's going to be. Like, we saw some, we saw it sometimes with Cooper Criswell last year where you didn't know whether he was in the rotation or coming out of the pen. Like, I bet that's Cutter Crawford's role this year. And maybe it's not fair to Cutter, who I think last year proved that he's more than deserving of a starting rotation spot in the bigs, but you're going to see a lot of guys making sacrifices this year. There's, I just read you all those depth relief options, guys who, like, I mean, the stat I was going to read off today when I was, a point I wanted to make was that the opening day roster means very little because Brendan Bernardino hasn't been on the opening day roster in either of the last 2 years, yet he's thrown in 112 big league games over those 2 years. But that's a guy right there who I really don't think he has much of a chance to make the big league roster on opening day, which is crazy because he's a guy who deserves to be a big league reliever. But you're going to see a lot of guys there making sacrifices, especially on the pitching end. Like, these relievers are not going to log 50, 60 games. Like, you're going to see a big shuffleboard of guys just coming up and down, going on and off the IL. And, you know, people are going to have to make sacrifices. And that goes for the lineup, too. I'm sure you got guys like Willier Abreu who are going to want to play every single day, and maybe you're forced to platoon guys like Vaughn Grissom, who worked really hard this offseason and want to be everyday baseball players and get their career jump started. David Hamilton, who proved that he was worthy of a spot last year. There's going to be a lot of guys that may not necessarily be happy with their roles, but it's going to make the team better because they're, like I said, they're never going to have schmucks out there.
Mm-hmm. Right, and that's what good teams do. Look at the 2018 Red Sox. World Series MVP was your platoon first baseman, Steve Pierce. Like, you just got to be ready when your number's called. And I think Cutter, to go back to Cutter really quickly, you said maybe it's not fair to Cutter. I agree, maybe it's not fair, but maybe it's what's best for Cutter because he revealed, and none of us knew this, I don't think any of the media knew, that he was pitching through an injury for, well, like 95% of the season last year. That's not exactly something you love to hear, so... Yeah, fair, I don't know, but better for Cutter? Possibly. So, I don't know. I just want I want guys to be open to whatever helps the team win. And I know guys, especially guys who haven't been paid, I know they want to get the individual accolades. It's important for those guys to get their money. It's not lost on me. I totally appreciate that, and I want all these guys to get paid. But at the end of the day, I want the Red Sox to win, and I think winning teams have players who make sacrifices.
I mean, the last two spots are going to be, there's going to be some good names that aren't on the opening day roster. Not meaning they won't, you know, contribute at some point during the season. But like, you're talking about a guy like a friend of the program, Zach Kelly. There was a legitimate stretch last year where he was Cora's go-to guy as like the mop-up guy. That guy is not likely to make the opening day roster. Brendan Bernardino. And this is actually kind of where maybe guaranteeing Justin Wilson's money kind of bites you in the ass, because a guy like Bernardino, would you rather have Bernardino right now or Justin Wilson? I would say Bernardino, but then again, I don't have, you know, all of the stats, all the underlying metrics on
Yeah,
Wilson.
Like, what do they see? Like, doesn't it feel like they see something? Like,
they do.
Like, we're
they
going
must.
With, like,
like,
just questioning it.
Don't throw your fastball and have a 2024 Ryan Brazier season. Like, I don't know. But like, the depth is... there's nothing ever wrong with depth. And Gordo, like you said, just like Bernie last year, for all of these guys, if you do not make opening day, you will be up at some point for a good stretch. Like, think of the names that you just said. Last year, it was Brad Keller, Chase Anderson, Cam Boozer. Like,
they guaranteed Chase Anderson a major league contract on like the last day of spring training.
Yes.
Because they needed that depth. They're so far removed from that. It hasn't even been a year.
Yeah, that and that's really what I funny. Mean. It's
what a the, day, Sammy.
Pat, you weren't there, but when Chase Anderson signed, Max Fried was facing the Red Sox in a game, and Bradford was like, "You guys want to come watch Chase Anderson throw his sim game?" And Goro and I were both like, "Nah."
I think I'll watch Max Fried against.
We're good.
The Braves brought everybody. Like everybody was there.
Yeah, Acuna, we walked right by him. That was cool.
Yeah.
One take, I have a take, just a theory. I've, you know, nothing of major substance to back this up, but this is my theory on Justin Wilson and Aroldis Chapman. I think the Red Sox simply wanted a variety coming out of the bullpen when it came to their lefties. They got Chapman, who throws 200 miles an hour, and then they have Justin Wilson, who I think we all believe is going to all but scrap that fastball that got hit really hard. So you're going to have one guy throwing gas from the left side, one guy kind of junk balling from the left side, and then Cora can pick and choose which one makes sense. He's got a mountain of info to tell him which one to use. I think it might be as simple as that.
You know, and maybe it is, and not for nothing with the Matt Moore addition, and maybe you could connect it to Penrod got hurt, so they jumped on a minor league deal on a lefty. But another way you could look at it is if they wanted all three of Chapman, Wilson, and Moore on the team, that would allow you to make Chapman the closer if you wanted to, right? Because now you've got multiple guys that can kind of be situational lefties. If you got three lefties in the bullpen, there's no harm making a lefty the closer if that's how it shakes out.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I don't love the thought of Chapman closing games in 2025, but also it's good to have the option. Hate to say it, it's good to have the option in case you need it. And I do like how many guys the Red Sox have on this team who have closed games, like Chapman, Hendricks, Whitlock, maybe Fulmer.
Justin Wilson was a closer. He was.
Was he really? Where was he a closer?
Detroit. Since Detroit, yeah.
Really?
Ooh, yeah.
God.
Yeah, dead serious, man.
Funny kind of sidebar comment. Do you know Matt Moore was once a top 30 prospect in Major League Baseball? He was like the
Wasn't
next
like
big thing
three?
With the Rays.
Wasn't he like number one?
Dude, he was number one.
The highest I see him is 27.
No, I think he was number one.
He was number one.
He was in 2012. He was number one, literally number one. So we got two number one prospects in baseball on the same team.
Yep. He was there over
13 years apart.
Harper, Machado. Then there was Matt Moore.
Trout. Tehran.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Julio Tehran. Man,
wasn't Martin Perez on those lists at that point, too? I know Martin Perez was a top 10 prospect when like Carlos Correa was number one.
29.
So that might be a little bit.
Right here.
For
29 in 2012. Yeah, hold on. I'll keep going.
Go a year forward. I swear he was with the Rangers. Doesn't even look like him. The picture that they have on MLB Pipeline is crazy. But
95. I think he was like top 30.
They can be flexible with what they want to do with the bullpen. It'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. But the thing that'll be most interesting to me is to see if the ninth inning becomes a problem, because I think they've got a good crop of guys that you feel good about, but not one that you feel is like lights out. He's going to have a 1.5 ERA, game's over in the ninth. Like, I don't know if they have that, but you've heard great things about Whitlock. Cora raving about what he's seen so far from Whitlock. I think we all feel really good about Justin Slayton after seeing what he did last year. And then you hope Chapman can just repeat what he's done the last couple of years and just be good, even though he's not like the elite guy he once was. And hopefully Hendricks can be some semblance of the closer that he was. Velocity, I want to say, was what? Like 93, 94 in his sim game. And when we last saw him, I think he was like 94, 95 on the fastball, but he wasn't that effective and it was really limited action. When he was last good, it was like 97. I don't know if we're seeing 97 from him. I don't know if that's going to come.
I'm just still stuck on Matt Moore, honestly.
How would you, in terms of who you would want to see closer out of the gate, how would you guys rank Slayton, Whitlock, Chapman, Hendricks?
In terms of who I'd want to see, or in terms of who I think we will see?
Who you want, like who you most confident, right, the 1-4? Or who do you want to be the closer?
In terms of wanting to be the closer, I'm a Justin Slayton guy. I want to see him in that role. I know it's not going to happen right off the bat, but I would probably go Slayton, Hendricks, Chapman, Whitlock. And that's even understanding that Whitlock might be the best out of all of them, but I think he's best suited going multiple innings, especially if they're going to be doing six-man rotations at times. Like, him going multiple innings is going to be really important for getting through those games on a short pen. So that's just my thought there. What about you guys?
I want Hendricks to get the first crack, just because I think that's the, I guess you could say, highest ceiling, just because we've seen him be so, so dominant as a closer in Major League Baseball. Second, that's tough. Slayton, I think, would be good, But I like having him for like pockets in the lineup that might be scary. Whitlock, we know, could be solid as a close. Well, do we know? We've seen him do a little bit of closing in the major league at the major league level, but that was in 2021. I guess I would go Hendricks one, Chapman last for sure, also because he's left-handed. And then I guess I'd have kind of Slayton second, Whitlock third. I think Slayton has more upside as a closer. I kind of like Whitlock in that multi-inning role. So yeah, that would be my order. Hendricks, Slayton, Whitlock, big gap, Chapman.
Pat, what about you? What's your order?
Interesting. We're all different. I would go Whitlock, Hendricks, Slayton, Chapman.
Did we all have Chapman fourth? No, I had Whitlock fourth.
Yeah.
So Chapman, I think Chapman could be fine as a closer. It's because they don't have a ton of reliable lefties that I wouldn't want to assign him to that role in the stress. Imagine the stress.
It would be stressful.
I don't give a shit about the lefties in the pen. That is as volatile as a closer gets. That is a heart attack. There are like five guys.
I wish Kenley didn't burn that bridge, because I know he wasn't perfect, but even when he was injured back throwing 89 mile an hour fastballs, I was still kind of just like, it's Kenley.
It's
Hall
over.
Of Fame closer.
If he'll get the game done. Felt yeah. over when he entered, even though he would make you kind of earn it as a fan. Sometimes you'd have to, and maybe a little bit different in a way that Chapman makes you earn it, because I feel like Kenley put guys on base, but they almost never got in. Whereas Chapman, like, he'll have that blow up outing. Like those guys he puts on base, they will score. Like he's going to be dominant most of the time, but when he's off, like he's off. Whereas Kenley, when he was off, he would still get through it.
Yeah. Was Kenley the most stressful closer that we've experienced in the last like 20 years Ooh. Or so? I have
Sammy,
one
come on.
That I think might top him.
No, Sammy. We had Matt Barnes. Ooh. We had
okay,
Matt
that's what I was going to say.
Matt Barnes.
I was going to say Matt Barnes. I didn't know if you guys were going to count Matt Barnes or not for that, but yeah, man. He was frustrating though, because he was so unhittable for half a season, and then
until he signed the extension. Oof. Pat, do you have someone else? Are you thinking of someone else?
Kind of. Mine is like not in a person in totality, but playoff Kimbrel was scary. Playoff Kimbrel was horrifying.
Playoff Kimbrel was tough. There's a reason that Chris Sale closed out the World Series.
Exactly. Yeah, playoff Kimbrel was bad.
He was locked down in those games and he got the save, but the way he got to it was incredibly
like the last game of the Yankee series. Like, remember that shit? Oh my god! And the Astros
made the catch.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's even a better question. Which one of those was more stressful, the Benintendi catch or the instant replay end of the Yankees season?
For me, it was the Yankee one. I was watching that with Yankee fans. I had multiple Yankee fans as roommates. That was a stressful fucking watch.
I'd say Astros.
Yeah.
That's definitely the loudest I've yelled at a game in my life is when Benintendi dove and caught that ball, and I injured my foot because I like stomped on the ground really hard, and I was limping the next day. Worth it.
God. I was so emotional during that World Series. Like when Steve Pierce hit the game tying homer after Mitch Moreland's 3-run homer, I did a shirtless belly slide across my wood floor. It killed. It was awful.
Your skin is just getting ripped off. I have a weird comparison. This bullpen, this 2025 bullpen, not a perfect comparison, but it's a little bit like the 2013 Red Sox, where it was like you had Hanrahan, was Melanson on that team? I think Melanson was on that team.
No, he went to
Zawa. Bailey. I'm thinking of Bailey. So it was Bailey. It went Hanrahan to Andrew Bailey to Tozawa to Uehara. So it was like they had multiple options and eventually one stuck. So that's kind of like,
happen.
I guess you could say that with Hendricks, Slayton, Chapman, Whitlock. So four guys on both of those teams. Basically, it's just they have options. I'd much rather a guy that I feel confident in, like Kenley, but we just don't have that.
And you know what? The result here, and like, would I love the Red Sox to do Pat's Who Says No and get Robert Suarez, and you've just got one more guy that you feel great about there? Yeah, I would love that. But the truth is, like, their bullpen is deep enough where they're going to have no issues making it to the trade deadline. Like, they're not going to limp to the trade deadline like they did last year. And if they need a ninth inning guy to push everyone into proper roles, like if no one really sticks in that closer role, they're going to be able to do it. This is one of the elite farm systems in baseball, and Ryan Helsley, among other guys, will be available. Like, we'll see. I'm sure Kenley Jansen will not be a Red Sox trade target, but like, there's guys like that who sign 1-year deals, and a lot of these teams sign these 1-year deal guys with the thought of trading them at the deadline. So I think they're going to be more than okay with the bullpen. I think they had a chance to make it elite if they wanted to right off the bat, but they're going to give guys chances. They're going to give guys opportunities. Guys certainly deserve it. Like, Pat, you talked about how Zach Kelly was like their go-to guy for a little while last year. Same could have been said about Brendan Bernardino, Greg Weissert, and Luis Guerrero, who we haven't talked about at all here. Both of them had crazy long scoreless streaks to end last season, and I don't know if either of those guys is going to be on the opening day roster. So, like, yeah, guys are going to get chances, and someone will stick in that role, I think. And if not, then they've got enough ammo to get someone.
You know, it'd be really funny is if one of those relief pitchers jokingly said to the media, "I think I should be closer. I deserve it," and just created more kind of positional role drama for no reason. That doesn't actually matter.
All right. We got to get to some enough said before we get on out of here. I've got a couple of things I could say here. So I want you guys to go first. So maybe one of you guys will take one of the two things I'm thinking of. They're both baseball related.
All right. You want me to go first?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. I'll go for it. Thank you to the New York Yankees for extending Aaron Boone. That was the cherry on top of a great Red Sox offseason. That guy is a fucking idiot. So I thoroughly enjoy that you signed him for several more seasons. So thank you, Brian Cashman. Thank you, Steinbrenner family.
I think I'm one of the few Red Sox fans that actually thinks Aaron Boone's a good manager. He deals, Pat, it is not easy to deal with that media.
And handle players in that market.
And he does a pretty good job of it. I know sometimes in-game management is kind of whatever, but
you know, it's pretty good. You know, it's super easy. Not throwing Nestor Cortez after not pitching for a month in a World Series
game. Good point. Pat, when I said Aaron Boone was a good manager, you know those like squeezy toys where you squeeze it and its ears and eyes pop out?
Yeah.
That's what you look like right there.
Stress toy. I half agree with you. I think he's an okay manager. I don't think he's bad. I think he's just average-ish, maybe slightly above average, but I do not think he's good at handling the New York media. I mean, how many memeable moments has he said? Like the, it's right there in front of us. Just like, that's not that way. I don't know.
Yeah, that's Pat. Right there. Yeah. That's Pat. No, but
it's
Samuel,
right
there
in front of us.
Who
like he, I don't know. I feel like he gets, who cares? I mean, we did. All right, fine. You just said he handles the media well.
Yeah, but like,
I just don't think he handles it that well.
The media never ends up fully crushing guys on that team. Like, there are so many guys that Giancarlo Stanton was a huge player for them in the postseason last year. And like, you can make the argument that the fan base and the media has torn him to shreds and ruined him, but that's a guy who produced despite all of it. And he's anointed Aaron Judge as the team captain, and it's worked out well for them. I don't think it's perfect, but I think it's one of those things where the grass ain't always greener on the other side. I don't know who the Yankees would hire that would be better.
Yeah, no, I feel you. I don't think he's a bad manager. I think Red Sox fans just like saying that. My only contention is the media thing. But
he's fun to hate. You know. He's fun to hate.
See, I feel like he'd be cool to hang out with. Like, when you watch him on John Boy, he seems cool. I just have a hard time, you know, I feel like the Red Sox more than got their revenge over him and the Yankees at this point for 2003. So I don't know, man. I'm just kind of indifferent on Aaron Boone. But
he's boys
Yankees,
with Cora.
Fuck the Yankees. He is boys with Cora.
Sammy, you got enough said?
I just want to talk one more time about Adam Ottavino's jersey. I can't get over that. It's one of the best things I've ever seen in my life. Almost cried when I saw it.
All right. neither of you guys took my enough said, so I'll just do one of them because it's the more important one. Shout out to one of my favorite players in the league. Just doing what's right. Doing the good Lord's work and not signing an extension with the Toronto Blue Jays. Shout out to my guy, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Stand firm, man. Get that money and get it in Boston, man. It's going to happen.
I'm interested in this. I'm interested specifically in you, Gordo, because I don't think there's a world where Casas and Vlad are both on the Red Sox. So I want to see how do you emotionally navigate this situation a year from now? You got a lot of time to plan, 365-ish days, but I just can't fathom Casas, Devers, Vlad. That is not the most athletic trio. I don't think the Red Sox would long-term sign up for that. So we shall see.
Yeah, emotionally, it's not gonna. I'm not looking forward to that aspect of it. But yeah, I agree with you. I don't think that you can have all three of those guys on the team because I don't think any of them. Well, Devers could DH, and you still would only be able to play one of Vlad or Costas at first. So yeah, I don't know. But that's a bridge that we're gonna cross when we come to it. And if the Red Sox were going to trade Costas, I would rather they trade him after he has a monster 2025 season and has all the value in the world rather than right now coming off an injury-riddled season when the first base market was flush with options. Like, it was just a bad time to look at Tristan Casas trades. I'm glad that didn't happen. But
Pat Brown, did we just hear Gordo kind of shift a little bit? He said, if they did trade Casas, I'd rather...
Well, listen, I mean, as a Vlad guy, I understand that if I want to pursue that path, like, it probably has to come with trading Costas. And it's nothing against Costas. It's just that this team doesn't have like a potential 40 home run right-handed bat. Like, I love Alex Bregman. I love Trevor Story. I think Christian Campbell could be really good. None of those guys have 40 home run potential in the way that Devers and Costas do from the left side. You need it from the right side.
What if Costas came up to you and was like, hey, Gordo, would you be okay with me being traded if it meant the Red Sox signed Vlad? Would you say yes to him?
I'd probably cry in his arms. I'd like to...
I don't know what to do, Tristan. It's not you. It's me.
Maybe we should teach, if Devers is going to move to DH, we'll teach Vlad third base again and see how that goes. Woof. Maybe we'll teach him left field like Hanley. That's what we'll do. Can you imagine?
He was there. He played left field. Can't deny it.
Who played first base when they initially signed Hanley? Was it Napoli still? It was still Napoli, I think.
Yeah.
No. Was it? No.
What year was that? 2015.
15.
Same year 15, as Pablo. 15.
I think Napoli was on a 2-year.
No. I think it's Napoli. Never played first.
Was it?
And Pablo was signed at the same time to play third.
Yeah.
Joe says it was Napoli.
Now I'm curious. I thought Napoli was on a 2-year. Oh, no. He said a 3-year.
It was a 3-year.
Yeah. Would that be right?
When he got his new nose?
What?
Yeah.
What?
Or his he got a nose job because he couldn't breathe when he slept, and he looked like a different guy 1 year to the other and freaked me out.
Ooh, I don't remember that at all. I'm going to have to look that up after the show.
Google before and after Mike Napoli. It's bizarre. You'll notice it when you see it.
I'm going to look it up. I'm going to wrap this. What do you see, Pat?
Starting right fielder. So the same opening day that Hanley was in left field, Pablo was at third base. Those were both such... Actually, I don't even hate the Hanley contract, but they...
No, it's fine.
Hindsight, they're looked at so poorly. Rusne Castillo was the starting right fielder.
And that right there is why this ownership group didn't want to spend for so long, but
oh my god! And that was the five aces year.
Yeah, the five aces was going into was so that was the Justin Masterson season.
Yep,
it was Wade Miley, Porcello, Kelly, Erod, Buchholz, and Owens.
What a team!
Owens, dude, you can't trade him. He's going to be an ace.
Yeah, who would want Cole Hamels for Swihart and Owens?
Hey, they wanted Mookie. They wanted Mookie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
That would have been so bad. It could have been That changes our lives, man. If they trade Mookie for Cole Hamels.
Well, 10 years later, we're complaining about too much depth on a team. So look how far the Red Sox have come since then, and they won a World Series along the way, which is what actually matters.
Yep. All right, we got to wrap this thing up. We appreciate you guys tuning in. What is it? Episode 180 of Play Tessie. Remember, hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts. 5 stars. Leave a comment. Find us on YouTube on the WEI channel where you can subscribe there. You can find the Play Tessie playlist there. Find all of our videos there. Hit the thumbs up on all of them. And as always, find us on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. So for Sammy and for Pat, for Joe producing, it's Gordo here for episode 180 of Play Tessie. Thanks for tuning into this one. Peace.